It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 247. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Jerem Jordan of BYU TV joins us to talk about two-point conversion and what he thinks about Kalani Sitake's first two games as BYU's head coach. Matt and I then break down what's happening with the BYU offense and what needs to change against UCLA. We also discuss Jimmer in China and Kyle Van Noy's big week in the NFL. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Join our conversation on Facebook.com/Rise and Shout and listen to us right now. Returning back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, BYU TV, as we were just saying, both talent and producer, Jerem Jordan.
I am back!
You're back. So, Jerem, there's only one question that's on everyone's mind since Saturday's game, and so I'll throw it out there. There's no reason to dance around it. Are we switching back to Royal Blue?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wouldn't that be awesome? Listen, Kalani Sitake told us, stay loyal to the Royal.
Yes.
That happened. In fact, funny story. So we made some BYU Sports Nation hoodies that were Royal Blue, and we only made 25 of them. And so when Kalani Sitake was named the head coach, we gave him one of them. And he's like, that's pretty good. I really like that. So he already liked Royal. But then we saw a picture of him the next day in the hoodie at J-Dawgs. And we were like, oh, he loves it. He's all over it. So then during fall camp, he said, you guys kind of helped me like get into the Royal again. We're like, oh, sweet. We helped him.
you are kind of, well, the coaches have yet to wear anything but Royal, Jerem. I mean, I know the players won't always wear Royal, but Kalani's got a Royal cap on all the time.
I'm yeah. Just so basically, yeah, we'd like to think that we helped in some way,
yeah,
which is
yeah.
You know what we do. We're here to help.
I'll give you credit. Whether it's deserved or not.
For your BYU Sports home teachers.
That's right. Yeah. That's what you guys are. That fits perfectly.
Spend your time visiting you at least once a month.
Yeah. And you've got the guy that's like super serious and the guy that jokes around. Like yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the real question, of course, everyone's asking, and I saw you tweet out, and I know you've shared your opinion on BYU Sports Nation as well, but for the record, Jerem, you are pro 2-point conversion decision. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Now, do you feel like you're in the minority when you interact with fans on Twitter or even with some of the folks that you work with on BYU Sports Nation? Because there's a lot of folks that aren't in the camp of pro 2-point conversion. Try.
I got the sense that there were a lot of people that were fine with it.
Yeah.
Because it didn't work, it's easy to be like, oh, should have gone for the exactly.
Yeah.
Like Pharaoh, when the Israelites crossed the Red Sea, the people in Egypt were like, why'd you lead them to the Red Sea? I knew they were going to get through there somehow. Like, because that happened,
it's easy
to say, well, that was a bad decision. No, it was a great decision. It just didn't work out.
So let's then jump to the next part, which is the play call. Is that the right play call in that situation?
It's a tough play call, isn't it? To put
yeah.
the ball in Taysom Hill's hands is the right call. To run he and five linemen at six defenders in that direction, you know, it was tough. It just didn't work out. You know, he did avoid those first two would-be tacklers, but they didn't slow him down enough to where the other guys came over. So if he had gone right, you know, we can break it down all kinds of ways. But, like, the Raiders went for two and got it. And they threw their play was probably worse than BYU's, but it worked. They threw a fade to Michael Crabtree.
Yeah.
They caught it. Like, that's not a high-percentage play.
No,
so Jack Del Rio was this hero and blah, blah, blah. I saw Scott Van Pelt say, I loved it. Even though BYU's didn't happen, it shows you he trusts in his players and he's going to be aggressive. And I think that we're going to look back on that Utah game as a moment that really set the tone in the Kalani Sitake era in two ways. One, his getting fired up and drawing the penalty for Kainaku's targeting. And two, the 2-point conversion. He's laying the groundwork for a program. It'd be myopic to just think about, well, it cost him in the Utah game. Think about what he's doing over many years. I think he's going to be at BYU for a long time, and we'll look back at that game and go, that's when he really set the tone for his era at BYU.
But Jerem, the perfect season's gone. We're not going to win the national championship
this
year.
The quest for perfection is over.
It's already dead. We're done. We're done.
Yeah.
So let's talk about not the targeting per se, because gosh, really, could go on all day. Which, by the way, to have the Fox announcers absolutely just basically roast those refs and the rule in general was pretty priceless. Which, by the way, it's great to have a good announcing team nationally doing the game. Gus Johnson is fantastic. The decision, and I'm calling it a decision, for Kalani Sitake to draw that penalty. How do you view that? I mean, obviously, it's a very un-Bronco or Lavelle thing to do. So in one way, it's just very different for a BYU coach to go, or like Dave Rose doesn't do that either, right? Like, that's just not, they're not the go ballistic types. But man, I mean, he put on a show. It was like a you know, a manager kicking dirt on the plate.
I loved it because it showed he's going to fight for his players. Yeah. Also, it was fun to just see him raw emotionally. I think that a lot of people relate to Kalani Sitake in a way that he's just personable. He's down to earth. Like, he makes everyone feel welcome and warm. Like, that's the culture that he's instilled. And that whole family thing, you would fight for your family if you felt like they were wrong. And so
right.
He felt like Kainakua was wronged, and he was. And so he fought for him. And I love that moment. And I think that plays into what I said a moment ago, which is he's instilling culture, which is, I've got your back, your front, your side. I have every side. And we're going to make sure that we fight for you. And that emotion was great because guess what? That's what everyone was feeling at the moment. So it's fun to live through him cathartically.
Now, I was not, Jerem, yelling uncontrollably at my television. That would have been somebody else. It couldn't have been me. Yeah, yeah. Luckily, there was no cell phones recording at the time. I would have made Kalani's fit seem tame in comparison. So the other thing coming out of this game is about the offense. Now, I'm going to share with you a theory. I think I know where you're going to land on this, but I'll share a theory, and then you tell me if I'm off or on my theory. I think we just played probably the best defense or the second best defense we will play all year and a top 10 defense in the country. If we make a couple of more throws and don't drop a few passes, we beat them by a touchdown or two, and it's not as big of a deal. Is this an offense in trouble, or did we just run into a defense that's really good, I guess is what I'm saying?
I think that Utah's defense is really, really good. And I'm not frustrated as much by the play against that defense. I'm really frustrated that BYU couldn't turn 6 turnovers into more than 13 points.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's the disappointment. Utah's defense is good. If you had told me BYU's only going to score 19 in that game, I would say it's probably fair given how good their defense is. But if you had told me, okay, BYU will force 6 turnovers and lose, I'd be like, you are out of your mind. Because we were talking about this today on BYU Sports Nation. What's the number that you should turn points off turnovers into per turnover? Blaine Fowler estimated 4 points. Between a touchdown and a field goal. I thought that was good. BYU has 18 points off 9 turnovers this season. Oh, my goodness. That's it? Or off 8. It's 19 off of 8, 2.4. So if had BYU been at the 4-point mark on all their turnovers, 24 points, just off turnovers. It was the last touchdown was not off the turnover. So in theory, that'd be 30 points in that game. It hurts to be like 21 points 4-1, but I'm with you. That's one of those games where it's like, oh man, that's a good defense. But the 6 turnover thing makes it so I cannot tolerate a loss in that game in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and the thing is, right, it's six turnovers, but it's only 3 net, right? Because you gave the ball back.
But still, +3.
+3, yeah. You'd like your chances.
Even as poor as Taysom Hill played as a passer, which was one of his worst games ever, but he was good as a rusher, BYU still lost that game. You can't lose when you're +3.
Nope.
Pat Whittingham came on BYU Sports Nation last week and said, when Utah, specifically is plus one, they win 80% of their games. When they're plus two, they win mid-90s of their games. So that was the rare plus three loss, which just stinks.
Yeah, it's a stomach punch, for sure. So after week one, a lot of the commentary, myself included, was, wow, Taysom looks slow. Not hearing as much about Taysom looking slow, saying that he got to the edge this time. Is this just a matter of him getting in, quote-unquote, game shape? I mean, that first game, he couldn't make the corner against, quite frankly, linebackers that 2 years ago he would have left him in the dust. But then against some of these Utah players who are fast, he did make the corner or made an edge. Is that what we're talking about here? Or do you think is he still maybe was last week was a little against Arizona a little scared or where are we with Taysom's running and what we'll see going forward?
He admitted after the Arizona game that he's not as quick as he was. He said that he's bigger, so naturally that combo. Plus, coming back from injury naturally, I just don't think he's going to be the same guy quite yet. Also, I think he is running calculated. He wants to play the whole season. He's been hurt three different times, and I bet he thinks, why should I risk myself crazily on any given play so that my season could potentially end? I just think he really wants to stay playing as the quarterback. And if it costs BYU a first down, so be it. I think that visually, that's what I'm seeing when he runs.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is okay. I mean, the longevity is more important than that individual first down. If it's at the end of the game, maybe he chucks it up in there. You remember the Texas play at Texas 2014 where he bowled over like three dudes into the end zone?
Yes.
I don't know that we see that a single time this year.
I bet you we do. I bet you he can't turn it off. I think we saw in that Utah game that I think eventually he will do that. Because I just think once you break down some of those walls, he'll be back. And once you get three games left, now all of a sudden it's no longer worried about hurt for the rest of the season, right?
If he's hoping to make it to the NFL...
Yeah,
then
well,
he will still have that mindset.
That's
yeah.
True. That's true. He's got to throw a little bit better than he did on Saturday.
True.
To get to,
I don't think he's. Yeah, he's not. He is not getting drafted as a quarterback, in my opinion. But if he wants to make a camp or even pursue that, yeah, he needs to be healthy.
Yeah, he needs to be healthy for sure. So let's flip to the opposite side of the ball. Obviously, the defense is new system. You know, a lot of new players, apparently, you know, when I said in spring that they should not have Francis Bernard switch to the defense, apparently I'm an idiot because I thought that was absolutely stupid that we'd need his depth at running back. And he's been fantastic through two games. As we look at this defense through two games, Jerem, I don't know that they played great offenses in either of those games, but they looked good. They're aggressive. The turnovers, all that, is that what we expect to see and expect to see going forward? Or you think, you know, once they hit an offense like UCLA on Saturday, they may not look quite as good?
I think UCLA is the best offense they will have seen through three games and one of the best, if not the best, all season.
Yeah.
Given the best quarterback BYU will face is Josh Rosen. I'm with you, though. I think this defense is really good and ahead, way ahead of where we thought they'd be.
Yeah,
I think the six turnovers is pretty crazy. Like, I don't know if there'll be another game with six turnovers. That's just wild. But the fact that the offense, you know, turned it over, three picks from Taysom Hill, those are all poor throws, right? Where they weren't safe throws, Arizona didn't go after it, you know, the offense. I think this defense is good. And I'm with you. I'm not exactly sure how good the Arizona and Utah offenses are. I think Arizona will be good. Utah, not sure yet. I think this defense is good enough to hang, and they feel like they're going to be in every game. Ed Lamb told Spencer on Coordinator's Corner this week, our defense is so good, we feel like we're going to be in every game. So if you're at Michigan State and your defense can be pretty good and the offense can get it rolling, now you have a chance. Turnovers can be a great equalizer when you're playing a better team, which I think that Utah is a better team, and on the road, definitely a better team, right?
Yeah.
But BYU was in that game because of the turnovers.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And last question. This is the toughest one. Starting out the Arizona game after a missed extra point, I basically, I said to folks at halftime, okay, this is going to be a long year kicking. Field goals, extra point, everything is going to be exciting, and that's terrible. Talk about your turnarounds. This Oldroyd kid can't, like, he doesn't even deviate from the center of the field goal post. Is this just done now? We have a kicker? I mean, that's it, right? He's mic drop, he's it, you know?
You would hope. I want some more volume with him, but it looks pretty good so far. I'm interested to see if he's a high 40s guy, because that would change the game for BYU.
Yes, it does.
If you could get to, you know, if you can get to the high, if you can get to the 30 yard line, can you kick a field goal? You know, that's something BYU hasn't really done for several years now. It's been a while. Like, do we have to go to Mitch Payne?
I think we do.
Because Trevor Sampson was like a 45 and in guy. If BYU can be high 40s, that kind of changes the game. But I'm with you. This is that's one of the most underrated stories so far, is that Jake Oldroyd, walk-on freshman kicker, Southlake Carroll, comes in and he's the guy. Makes the clutch field goal, of course, 33-yarder, and then the 42 and the 43-yarder against Utah. So that's pretty awesome. It's still an issue to not have a guy that can kick off through the end zone. It's unbelievable that BYU doesn't have a single guy that can do that.
I know someone that could probably do it. Ashley Hatch. I'm just saying. I don't know what she's doing on Saturdays, but I bet straight on.
She's winning the nation in goals, baby.
I bet you straight on. One of those girls on the soccer team could do it. I'm just saying. Like, I can't do it.
I would love to have them put out there and then just see. You know, if it's like it goes to the 20, you're like, oh, okay, never mind. But if it goes into the end zone, you're like, oh boy, come on, guys.
Come on, guys. Let's pick it up. Yeah, and from the punting game perspective on special teams. Well, I guess I lied. I'll get you out on this question. Obviously, Linehan does that rugby style. Are we in trouble when we're backed up into our own space getting a big punt off?
I think he's capable of punting straight up pretty well, but he shanked the 19-yarder, so that's why Red Almond came in that situation. And then there was a fumble on that play, so it was like, well, that worked out.
Yeah,
that
was
the
worked
play
perfect.
After the Hunter Marshall drop.
Oy.
So it was fine, right?
I think that's three drops for him in two games. We don't have a tight end. That's kind of depressing. Not yet. We'll see.
Well, but yeah, the ever-long search for the tight end continues, right? Hey, where's Dennis Pitta?
Dennis Pitta's not walking through that door.
Ever.
Yeah, he's not walking through that door.
Yeah, Gordon Hudson's not walking through that door.
No. They're not walking through. Well, Jerem, it's been a pleasure, of course, having you on. As I said before we started recording, we don't have time for ridiculous conversations about movies, but next time I will carve out some time for ridiculous conversations about movies. But we'll, of course, encourage everybody to watch or listen to you on BYU Sports Nation. And what shows are you producing? What are you behind the camera for?
Yeah, so I produced the pre- and post-game shows for the football game. So it's called Countdown to Kickoff. It's 1 hour before every BYU football game this season. So 9 Eastern time coming up Saturday night, getting ready for UCLA. And then, of course, right after you watch the game on ESPN2, you can tune into BYU TV, and we have full highlights, reaction, interviews, analysis. So that's the case for every football game throughout the entire season.
And I watched you guys watch the show on Saturday afterwards. It was just as depressing to watch it then, to watch the highlights, as it had been in real time. But what are you going to do?
That was a fun one.
That was a fun one. All right, Jerem, thanks for having you. Thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
Thanks, Adam.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, have you recovered from Saturday night?
I'm working on it. It's a little bit of a rough weekend, but you just got to move on to the next game.
Did you at any point randomly over the last couple days have you just said targeting calls are stupid?
I've discussed the targeting rule with people ever since, between now and then.
Any person that would listen, basically.
On at least one occasion, somebody who was not interested in listening.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But Matt, before we jump into something like reviewing the Utah game, which will bring us down, let's go to something lighter, something fun. All right? You ready for this?
Yeah, what do you got?
We're going to jump into the tweet bag.
Tweetbag.
So you can ask us a tweetbag question through three different methods, Matt. First, Twitter, at BYU underscore Rise Shout. Facebook, facebook.com/Rise and Shout. I post a thread every morning before we record, usually on Tuesdays. So you can ask a question there. We've got several from there, including this one we're about to discuss. Or email, if you prefer the good old snail mail. That's now snail mail. You get that, right? Like, it's snail mail. No?
Email is now snail mail?
Yeah. It's not instantaneous. Well, I guess it is if I have alerts. Anyway, that's riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Matt, your wife is back.
She is back, and she has triumphantly declared her return in the text of her question.
Yes, I'm back. And then she says question, which, of course, we'll know because you're going to have a question mark at the end of the sentence.
Technically, there's two questions here.
That's true. So she asks, and by the way, I'm not exactly sure where this is going, but she asks, do you know the Muffin Man? Do you know where he lives? Matt, what is this question about?
I just want to point out that on its face, this question sounds kind of creepy. But but let's go ahead and skip that for a minute. Let me explain. So my wife and I, we've been married for 13 years. And over the course of 13 years, we've disagreed on several things, as any married couple is going to do. But one of our longest standing disagreements is not necessarily about whether or not either of us know the Muffin Man, because everybody's familiar with the song. They know the Muffin Man. I'm not necessarily going to sing it for everybody.
Do you know the Muffin Man? The Muffin Man, the Muffin Man. Do you know the Muffin Man? I think it's the next part where there's some disagreement.
Yeah, the next part there's a disagreement. I was going to stop you. So the question is not whether or not anybody knows the Muffin Man, but the question is where exactly the Muffin Man lives. So his address is given
Drury
in the song.
Drury Lane.
Drury Lane, right? Obviously. Drury Lane.
Yes.
And I think that anybody who wants to go to the Muffin Man's abode is going to look for him by Google mapping or whatever it is.
Drury Lane.
So the disagreement is, if my wife were looking for the Muffin Man, I'm afraid that she would have a difficult time finding him.
Well, where does she think he lives?
He lives on Muffin Lane.
He
does not. No, he does not.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, before the advent of what we call the internet, I could understand someone having such a misconception. Just Google it. I just Googled it. It's Drury Lane. Like, there's no argument. There's no, like, well, in some versions, it's just Drury Lane.
I don't know what to tell you. I can't watch Shrek.
The Muffin Man clearly, the cookie. He has that conversation.
Drury Lane. I believe there was a Drury Lane in the town that we grew up in.
Really?
I think there was. Somewhere I've lived has a Drury Lane.
Well, we had another relative tweetbag question from our brother Don.
Here he goes.
And he says, will my youngest child graduate from BYU before the Big 12 makes a decision? And the answer is very possibly. And by the way, his youngest child is quite young.
Very young. Like, as a matter of fact, yeah, her age is, I believe, measured in months.
Yes, yes. So no.
Because you do that. You do that for like 2 years, right? I mean, I think by the time you get to 2 years, people stop using months. Because it'd be weird to say, how old is this child? Oh, 26 months.
What are you talking about? I still tell people I'm 452 months.
I'm a man. I'm 452 months.
Yeah, which I'm not 452 months, but.
And that's probably, that's, I'm not.
Wait a second.
It's not even the right number.
How does this work? Math?
Math. What is this? This isn't a math podcast. What is this? Who's hijacked
450? I was way under.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I was way under. I had to break out my calculator for that. All right. So Matt, let's jump in next to CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, the women's soccer team ranked 7th in the nation, dismantled SMU and number 19 Ohio State this past week to the tune of 4-0 and 3-0, two shutouts. Vasconcelos was named the WCC player of the game. That was before she scored another goal in the Ohio State game and now has 5 goals in her last 4 games.
Is that good?
Yes, for the soccer uninitiated, that is quite good.
All right, good. I just want to make sure we were all clear on that. Yeah, that's good.
So they are setting themselves up as a contender for tournament action later this fall. Matt, staying with them, they will have Utah State on the road in Logan this weekend. Women's volleyball, ranked 9th in the nation, dominated in Idaho, dropping Boise State, Missouri, and Idaho State in straight sets over the weekend and a tournament there. Not really big challenge out of any of those three. They've got CSUN. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what that is. I guess I could Google it, but that seems like too much effort. And, of course, Utah coming up this weekend. So some big in-state rivalry matches for both women's soccer and women's volleyball coming up in the next week.
California State University Northridge.
California State University Northridge. Okay, there you go.
Originally founded as the San Fernando Valley campus of the Los Angeles State College of Applied Arts and Sciences.
Oh, my gosh. You don't need to read Wikipedia to us. You really don't.
No, that's right off their webpage.
Oh, okay, well.
They have their own webpage now.
Since you're doing that, I'm going to drink a tasty beverage.
I'm going to keep talking to drown that out. You couldn't hear me open up my tasty beverage because it's just water.
Yeah, it's hard to hear that. So, Matt, now let's go to Cougars in the pros. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Ooh, sit down, Goodell.
Hey, you know, I saw an interview with Goodell at halftime of the Patriots game on Sunday night. I'm not sure there's any figure in sports since the hair man, Craig Thompson, that I have just wanted to punch as soon as I see his face come on the screen.
My wife is like, a little over the top.
My wife's like, you're getting visibly angry. I'm like, yeah, I am angry.
Wishing to, like, go to physical violence. I mean, you might need to talk to somebody about this.
I think it's warranted.
Can't you just boo him like everybody else? And I mean everybody else.
Everybody else. Well, he's probably got some people that like him. So, Matt,
really?
Jimmer.
You think anybody likes him?
His wife? Probably not.
No, he's got to have friends like anybody else, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
you know? I wonder what is it, when he is not at work, what do you think Goodell talks about?
I don't know. What do you think?
Do you think Goodell has hobbies?
Okay, so in an all serious note, in that interview, okay, which is supposed to be on like the Today Show, like if you're trying to get me to not watch the Today Show, bring on Roger Goodell. Like that's going to guarantee.
Well, you know, maybe they're planning a surprise for you, and they just don't want you to tune in, so they can talk about it openly.
Okay, there you go. So they were talking about Case Keenum's last year, the part where it looked like to everybody watching he got a concussion on the field, right? But they never got taken out of the game. You might remember this for the then St. Louis Rams. So he gets asked by Matt Lauer on the interview, so what did you think of when you saw, were you watching that game? He said, I was watching that game. What did you think of when you saw Case Keenum go down like that? And this was no joke, the first word out of Goodell's mouth. I thought they weren't following our protocol. So no, it wasn't that he was worried about Case Keenum's health. He wasn't, oh, I hope he's okay. It's somebody has violated the protocol.
Do not violate the protocol. You won't be eliminated.
It's like every person, like all of us work at big companies. We know people like this where it's like the policies become the most important thing outside of like what's actually important.
This is an example of the I don't know what the metaphor here is, but it's exactly the way you described it, right? Is that the process and the policy becomes the focus. That's the key.
Yeah, yeah. All of a sudden, that's more important than the game or gosh, somebody's freaking health, man. Like, and your first thought, Roger, should be, I hope Case is okay. Like,
and you know what? Maybe it was. Let me throw some of that here that might actually make this worse. Perhaps his first thought was, man, I hope he's okay. But he felt compelled, in order to kind of protect the shield, to focus the answer to his question on the policy.
Yes.
And to say, hey, we have a rule, and it's not my fault. It's not the NFL's fault that these guys didn't do it.
Yes,
and they need
Rams,
to be disciplined. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so And there's a part of me thinks that makes it worse.
Yeah.
No, he feels compelled to then
emphasize.
It's just awful. And it feels, if we're really serious about, and we're going to get into this in a minute, because if we talk about the targeting calls, we're going to get into this. If we're really serious about safety, then we need to do things that make sense. You know,
make people safer.
Yeah, it's like security at the airport. Like, some of the stuff that they do to you in security at the airport has nothing to do with security. It has to do with flow. Like, even some of the things that they will mask, it's just stupid, right? So, I think it's the same thing. Like, you know, they will do some of these things, you know, and they lose sight of what they're really trying to accomplish in an effort to put together a process that they think will make people feel good about what they're doing.
Right, right. So,
and it's just dumb.
Moving on from Roger Goodell, because I could have a whole I Hate Roger Goodell podcast.
I give you another sit down, Goodell. You know, we're recording. I'm on the road today. Sometimes when we record and I'm in a hotel room, I wonder, like, if somebody hears me, like, if they're walking by and they hear me yell the Cougars in the News thing or the sit down, Goodell, like, what they think is going on when they hear that. I mean, I have no way of knowing if it's ever happened, but if I walk by and heard somebody yell something weird like that, that might become a story I would tell. Some, you know,
loud noises.
It's just bizarre. What kind of hotel is this?
So Matt Jimmer is back in the news. A friend of the podcast, Dick Carmen in the Deseret News, had an article about Jimmer being anxious to start his career over with the Shanghai Sharks, which I don't know how I'd miss it. That's Yao Ming's team.
I'd be anxious too. Yeah, that's pretty cool that it's Yao Ming's team. I didn't know that either.
So I didn't know that too, that as well. So anyway, he's, you know, it was mostly, you know, things you'd expect to see. But I'm really excited to see what he can do over there. Obviously, I'm not going to really see it, you know.
All the highlights will end up in your Twitter feed.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but I'm excited for him to finally just get to play, you know.
Yeah, and it looks like they're gonna unleash him, which is fantastic. So, Matt, as far as former Cougars in the NFL this weekend for Detroit, Ziggy had a quiet game with only two tackles, double-teamed a lot of that game. Kyle Van Noy, though, Matt, 10 tackles and a sack in his first start.
Awesome. Awesome.
I did not watch this game, but when I saw the box score, I was pretty excited. Thoughts on KVN?
Hey, you know, I think we've all, and we've said this before, he has the talent to compete at that level. He's just had a couple of bad breaks.
Yep.
And now that when he was given the real opportunity, I think we got to see who Kyle Van Noy is. And hopefully he can keep doing this at that level and become a real mainstay of the defense in Detroit. You know, I just not surprised by what he put together and hope he gets continued opportunity to do that.
Bold prediction, Kyle Van Noy, Pro Bowler.
Pro Bowl.
Write it down. For the Ravens, Bronson Cafusi did not play. DeAndre Wesley did not play, but Dennis Pitta made his triumphant return, Matt. 3 catches, 39 yards. Not a huge day, but after all the injuries and things he's been through, that's a pretty huge victory in and of itself.
Yeah, we'll take it. Just get him back out on the field.
A couple of other notes. Paul Asike played in 20 snaps for the Chicago Bears. No carries. Daniel Sorensen, Matt, 47 plays. Was in on special teams plays and a lot of defensive plays, had a QB hurry. So a nice weekend for Daniel Sorensen on the Kansas City Chiefs. So, Matt, it's time to talk about this Utah game. I'm actually going to change the agenda here. We are not going to talk about the targeting rule. It's been, like, hashed over. We both think the call is bad. You said your thing about, you know, this doesn't actually make them any safer. Let's just call it good. Right?
Okay.
So I am X-ing that out of the I just did it right there in the agenda. So Matt, let's talk about, I was going to talk about the rivalry too, but I don't really care. I mean, like the rivalry, all these articles that it feels different or whatever, is that just apathy on my part because we've lost to them 6 times in a row? Or
no, I felt like that, you know, that was something everybody wanted to talk about leading up to the game. You know, because it was something to talk about because there hadn't been a game yet. You know, and we don't really know the answer to that question after one game.
No, we don't. And the rivalry is bigger than football, too, right? We've still got Voldemort refusing to play us in basketball, so friggin' idiot.
Voldemort.
Oh, I can't stand that guy. Like, it's just like anytime people say like Whittingham's kind of a tool or whatever, I'm just like, look across the office at his basketball coach. Like, Whittingham's not even on the same scale.
I don't really have a problem with Whittingham.
Well, you must have a problem with Whittingham. He said no to BYU. He turned down the job.
Okay, let's just, can we do some real talk here for a minute?
Sure, sure. Bring it.
You know, he was offered the chance to coach a program that Urban Meyer had built up and turned into something for a lot more money.
Yes.
Right? And so all of us, you know, we can sit here and be like, oh, my loyalty to BYU. I love BYU. But, you know, if you're given an opportunity to go, you know, work at one place versus another, you're going to look at a wide variety of things. And if you're going to get paid significant, and we're talking, I mean, these are large dollar numbers, right?
Yeah, we're not talking that it was 20, 25 bucks a week.
And there are challenges in coaching at BYU that I think he wasn't interested in doing. He made a professional decision. It's not personal.
Oh, it's personal. It's personal. I feel it. No, I don't care. I don't have any.
The only reason it makes me upset is because I think he's a good coach. And I'd like to have a good coach, but I think we have one, a good coach.
Yes, I think we do. So, Matt, let's go to that, speaking of coaching, that two-point call at the end of the game, okay? This one we are going to discuss. You came out in a text to me very quickly that you were not approving of this. I, of course, am because I love this type of stuff. Matt, let's walk through what you would have done.
So I would have kicked the extra point, taking the game into overtime. That's what I would have done.
So
I understand the theory behind going for two here, right? I get it.
You understand that 2 points is more than one.
Okay, so here, let me explain.
Okay, go ahead.
At some point, college football overtime rules are basically designed to take a game that ends in a tie and force you into a situation where a single play is going to decide the outcome of the game.
Yes.
That is what it is designed to do.
Yes.
And so if you're Kalani Sitake, and it sounds like they had made the decision when they got the ball, but when the drive started, the decision was we're going to go down here, we're going to score, and we're going to go for two.
Which you need to do, by the way. You should not make that decision after you score the touchdown.
You don't make it in the moment. As a matter of fact, on a philosophical level, like as far as your approach to game planning, you should kind of have that decision made in the back of your head. Yeah. And then you can evaluate as you go.
Yes, because the flow of the game may change how you feel about that.
Right, and the evaluate as you go is kind of where I'm going. So if you're Kalani, you're looking at the situation, you're saying, okay, this is going to come down to a single play at some point. And right now, I can let it be this play where I'm on offense, which is preferable, versus having the game be decided on a play where you're on defense. You'd like to have the ball. And you have it basically down at the goal line. You know, you're just a couple yards out.
Yes.
And so you're really within striking distance to get get the score that you need to win the game. Whereas if you go into overtime, you could be forced to make that play even if you are on offense from the 20 or the 25.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So and you could be forced, you have to score a touchdown. You know, and a field goal isn't going to cut it. Now you're trying to punch one into the end zone from 20 yards out. So what do you do? You say, well, I'm going to take my chances here where I have the ball, I'm on offense, I'm in control, and I'm going to go in. So I understand the theory, but given the way that game was going, given the fact that Jamal was out, given all of the miscommunication that had happened on offense, we weren't ready to run the play. And so you kick the extra point, you gather your senses back together, and you go. Now, I don't know if there's a play in his pocket that's the two-point conversion play that involves Jamal Williams. But I do know that when they ran out to run the play they had called, only 10 people lined up.
Yes, yes.
You know? So then you have a guy come running out from the field. So now everybody knows at least he's not getting the ball, and it's probably not a pass play. And now you got Taysom in the backfield all by himself. And you don't have the right numbers on the line of scrimmage for the play you've called. You don't have a timeout. You can't audible into a kick. So I would have just called the extra point to begin with. But you get yourself into that situation. You take the delay of game, and then you kick the extra point.
Yeah.
because you don't have the right personnel to audible out. So that's just my opinion. Now, do I think it was an idiotic move? Am I like all upset? No, I mean, I totally understand why they made the decision they made. It's completely defendable.
You just would have made a different
decision. I just would have made a different decision. If I lost faith in the coaching staff or anything, no, it's not like that for me. I'm not at that level with it, but I would have done something else given what I had seen so far, especially, well, I guess in the second half you didn't see much offense, but I just would have done something different.
Yeah. And I understand that. The play call is not necessarily my biggest issue, though I would have called a different play. The problem is against a defense in backup of what you said, though I was okay with them going for it a little bit more than you. You're playing against a very, very good defense, right? And playing in that small space takes away some of your options in the passing game, right?
Yep.
That being said, I don't want to throw fade there, right? Like I know that worked, and Jerem brought this up for the Raiders on Sunday, right? They threw a fade and it worked. I don't want to throw a fade. That is a low chance of success, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like putting the ball in your best player's hands, and they did that with Taysom. I just think the play could have been designed a little bit better against a team that, quite frankly, running up the middle against them is insane because they are really good up the middle. Like, they've got a couple of guys, run stuffers up in the middle, that are going to make a lot of money on Sundays, right? And you're running into that group towards the left side of your line, which is the weaker side in the running game so far this year. So,
and on that side is where you had the bad numbers.
Yes, and on that side is where you have bad numbers. Now, overall, though, like, that's just – that happens, right? And you can say, well, it shouldn't happen on that play. But the problem is they had no more timeouts. Once you got out there, Taysom has to make a call, right?
Right.
And he has to – it becomes no longer the coach's – like, the coach, maybe Detmer should have called a different play. But at that point, Taysom's got to run the play that he's got, and then he's got to try to get in the end zone, which he did. And he did. He tried, right? And he didn't get it. So,
and you know, but he could have. I mean, he almost pulled it off. Is the crazy part?
Well, I mean,
is that all of the, everything went wrong? Right? It was a broken play. You got guys in the backfield, and for a second, I thought, oh goodness, he's still going to get in there.
I did too, and then unfortunately, I mean, they're just really good. The Utah defense is really good.
Yeah,
they have strong, good tacklers, speed, size. Like, this is not against Arizona. He scores on that exact play, even if it's broken. I think he finds a way to get through them. So, Matt, let's talk about the offense because that's where all the debate has been. So let's return to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
So, Matt, Freddie Woods on Twitter asks, and that's at FreddieCougar21, what's the main problem with the offense so far this year, Matt? I've got one, but I'd love to hear your thought.
Mine basically comes down to two words. It's unfinished product.
Unfinished product.
They're just not done putting it together yet. I mean, you see a lot of communication things going on. You see, I think there's numerous instances where receivers are doing something different than what Taysom expects them to do, or Taysom will do something different than what Ty was expecting him to do. So I think that they're just not – they're just still working on it. They're still installing it.
Yeah. So I've got a different word for you, okay? Different word. Utah. The biggest problem with BYU's offense was Utah. Their defense is probably a top 10 defense. Quite frankly, all this like crazy, and we'll get to this here in a second, bench Taysom, the offense is terrible. Like, what are you basing that on? We just played a top 10 defense, probably, and they caused three turnovers and shut the offense down.
I will say this.
What did you think was going to happen?
I had an extremely emotional reaction to the pick six.
Oh, it's a terrible way to start a game, isn't it?
And I was saying things like, "You got to pull him out."
I know you were. I'm sure
he's
you were.
He's the only player that everybody's calm except for Taysom. You got to pull him out and let him calm down.
Wait a second. Remind me, how many interceptions did Tanner throw?
Somebody in the room said that to me. Like, well, what do you want to do?
Or Tanner in there? I mean, I know that's the emotional reaction, but I mean, everyone talks about that comeback, almost comeback. If Tanner doesn't. And then there's just some weird bounces. If Tanner doesn't start off terrible, you win that game, right? If Taysom doesn't throw three interceptions, we win the game. But on the flip side of that, it's like, you know, Utah was doing stuff, right? Taysom had a couple of bad throws for sure, but he was under pressure. They were blitzing him. They were giving him different looks. I mean, Taysom had a terrible game, right? No one's going to argue that. Saying, well, if Tanner had been in there, he wouldn't have had the same problems. I'd love to see a guarantee that. He did just a few months ago.
Yep.
He had the same problems, right? So Justin Whiting, that's at Jan Whiting, he says the O-line is the biggest problem, ? Taysom seems rushed. I'd agree with that. And there's no lanes for the running back. So, Matt, outside of what we just talked about, is the O-line still a major concern for you?
But we got to keep in mind that there's a pretty good defense we were up against last weekend, and I don't know that we see another defensive front quite like this one. I'm not trying to let the O-line off the hook, but it's a pretty good team that they were up against. Now, again, I think they're also a work in progress.
Yeah, I mean, you're starting with the left side of the offensive line that is not who should be starting, right? And I'm not disparaging their talent. It's just not who we thought was coming in. And I think the offense will be fine. I think in the end, though, this is not going to be a great offense. I think it'll be a good offense. But I don't think it's going to be great. And I think the offensive line is one of those reasons. I don't think we have a great offensive line this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lapuahu, who had looked really good against Arizona, he looked pretty mediocre against Utah. On the right side of the line. I mean, he got beat by a couple of linebackers that caused major issues for Taysom. So, I mean, it's not just that left side who we've been disparaging in these first 2 weeks. James Lowe on Facebook, Matt, asks a question that I think all of us have been doing. What's the main driver about not having downfield passing plays? So far this year, Taysom Hill is 0-for-9 in passes over 20 yards and 4-for-9 in passes 10 to 19 yards. Those are stats are courtesy of BYU Statsman on Twitter. And Matt, obviously those numbers are not good. And we have not had a single pass over 20 yards completed this year. What's the issue? James is asking, is it pass protection, play calling, receivers? What do you think is the biggest factor of not being able to throw downfield so far?
So I think Ty Detmer's MO is to kind of – he wants to take what the defense gives him. And there's a couple of things that would stop you from taking those shots downfield. Now, they did take a couple of shots. I felt like they took more shots downfield against Utah than they had against Arizona. But – so it's a combination of all of these things, right? So it's play calling. So the plays aren't getting called necessarily to do that much. But maybe they're not getting called that way because the defense isn't giving you the opportunity to do it based on a strong pass rush. Or receivers not being able to get open deep,
right?
And so if those things aren't there, I think you're gonna take what you can get. You're gonna have guys settle down in between the bubbles on the zone and try and find try and turn around and get open, or you're gonna do some other things to take what they give you. And I think defenses are kind of they want to try and force Taysom into throwing these medium sized passes is what it looks like. To see if he can beat him that way. You shut down the running game, shut down the big play, and see if BYU can put together a long drive.
Yeah, I think it has a couple of issues. The passing game. I think the offensive line play has been not good enough to give him time. We've all known this. Taysom's accuracy on the deep throws has never been his strong suit. Right. That's been true his entire career. That's not new. So there's that part. The other part, and this was very true against Utah, there was no separation by the wide receivers, right? So throwing a long pass makes sense if people are open. Now, Hunter Marshall, when it hits you in the chest, you got to catch that, right?
Yeah.
He's got 2 drops in 5 targets so far this year. That's not going to get it done. The other part, Matt, is just mystifying to me. Nick Kurtz, 7 targets in 2 games. That is to me, I don't understand what's happening there. It's hard to know sometimes. Are these two teams just decide to take him away, right, and let Juergens and Lalu Pututau beat us? By the way, Gus Johnson's pronunciation of all the Polynesian names, his pronunciation game was was spectacular. Gus Johnson's that. How good is it to have a good national team doing your game?
It is fun. It does make the game. It does make it feel different.
I had a feeling that these two guys had actually watched some tape of both teams.
Yep, and taking the time to learn how to pronounce names correctly.
No, and learned how to pronounce names correctly. And, you know, when Jamal Williams was off the field, they were on it, right? Like, the sideline report of them, like, Jamal's out, you know, and updating his status when, you know, he was gone for a drive and a half against Arizona and the announcers didn't even notice, right? All of us are like, what's going on with Jamal? It turned out they were just resting him. But, you know, I was, like, freaking out. Like, this is what announcers are there for.
No, they were there for Brady Quinn's story hour, those guys.
Oh, my gosh, Brady Quinn's terrible. So, Matt, VanquishTheFoe.com had an article that I'll discuss briefly. Keith Schertz is the author. Basically, it's time to pull Tanner, pull Taysom and put in Tanner. Matt, I'll give you my reaction, then you can give yours. Stop it. Stop it, people. Like, this is insane. This is why people make fun of BYU fans. Like, two games in, you've got a really good defense they played against. He had a terrible game. Don't misunderstand me. Tanner had a couple of terrible games last year. Like, you're not bringing in, you know, you're not bringing in Ty Detmer in his prime, guys. Like, Tanner has not proven that yet. This was a great defense. If Taysom has three or four of these in a row and against lesser defenses, yeah, he's going to get pulled, right? That will happen if he keeps playing this way. But UCLA's defense isn't like Utah's, right? Like, and the other part was Keith's article, he talks about, you know, lots of analysis. His problem, if you start doing statistical analysis and don't control for who the teams are playing, like he starts talking about red zone efficiency and he tries to compare Riley Nelson and Christian Stewart to Taysom, those guys played when they played against terrible schedules. Like, Christian played one good team, right, when he was the starter. Riley played, like, two. Like, stop. Stop with this, you know, Taysom's terrible stuff. The stats don't back you up. And don't say that they do just because you cherry-pick the ones you like. So, I'm done. Anything from you?
No. I'm going to leave that one right there. You pretty much took care of it.
So Andre Hutchins on Facebook, and by the way, I think Andre likes Facebook better now because he can say a lot longer. He agrees with me. He says, three-time face bagger. This is now his, I think, third week in a row.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see how high this number goes.
Yeah, keep it going, Andre.
How many consecutive weeks does Andre get us with a face bag question?
He had a streak, I think, of like 8 weeks in a row once off of Twitter.
He clearly wants to own the questions off of Facebook the way Sweeney owns Twitter. Yeah, that's what he wants to do.
You need to come up with a catchphrase. Anyway, have you heard people calling for a QB switch? The answer is yes. Why are fans so quick to jump ship after two games? Because some fans are dumb. That's my commentary, not Andre's. I hate losing to Utah, but this team is better than I thought coming into the season. And Taysom is the right guy for the job. Matt, is this team better than you thought? The same or worse than what you thought coming in?
I think this is about what I thought coming in. You know, I've looked at what we expected on the schedule and those kinds of things, and I thought Utah was a possible loss when we started. I was in some pretty serious blue goggles last week, you know. But this is about what I thought we had.
Okay,
you're going to come through this September stretch with a loss or two.
Man, we are like 35 minutes in, Matt, and we haven't even talked about UCLA. So I'm gonna up the tempo. We're gonna go fast, go hard. Are you ready?
All right, it's going to be a mess.
Kimberly Potts Frazier on Facebook asks, do you think Taysom is playing like he is a chained horse? Kimberly, not anymore. I would have said that before Arizona, but he looked like a beast against Utah from a running standpoint.
I feel like through the first half of the Utah game, I'd agree with this. The second half, you see him, he's letting loose a little bit, and that's part of the reason I think you can't take him out. Is he seems to he's just starting to get comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just starting to feel like himself again, and so you got to let him ride that out because that's why you picked him over Tanner Mangum in the first place.
Well, and he beat an NFL caliber linebacker to the edge this week, right? And that's where I was like, okay, he may never be the dynamic runner he was in 2013. I don't know. He's bulked up. He's tried to do some other things physically, so he may never be that guy. But, man, he had a couple of runs where you're like, yeah, that's where he is. So, Matt, our UCLA preview now here in the next few minutes. According to Football Outsiders, they are the 11th best offense in the country. They were top 20 last year. 64th best in defense. Utah is fourth, according to Football Outsiders, in defense so far this year. So a little bit of a difference there. So far, Matt, the loss against Texas A&M, who's a very good team, probably a top 25 team, and then, of course, they beat up on UNLV, who's terrible. Matt, looking at UCLA, I'll ask you the same question that I just asked you about BYU. Are they who you thought they were coming into the season, or do you feel like maybe they're a little bit better or worse than we thought?
They're about who I thought they were coming in. They may be a little bit better than I thought, but I think they're also a situation where you don't know exactly what you've got yet. They need a little bit more time.
Yeah, that a road game against a tough Texas A&M team and then home against a terrible team. I'm not sure we know. I would say my opinion on them hasn't changed. I think they're a top 40 team, and I think that's where they're at as of now. So Josh Rosen obviously is a fantastic quarterback. The thing I'm going to focus on here, Matt, is their defense is below average so far.
Yep.
They gave up quite a bit of yards to Texas A&M and UNLV, even when the game was still in doubt. The UNLV offense was doing okay, and they're terrible. Matt, I'm not scared of this defense. I'm not scared. I don't think they can do to us physically on the outside with their cornerbacks, nor in the interior what Utah did to us. Or quite frankly, in some ways, I'm not sure they can do what Arizona did to us.
Yeah, I don't. This is not the same defense as what we've seen.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. You said, it's hard to know.
But you know, I think their best defense might just be a good offense. You know, and if you look at what Utah did, especially in the second half, I mean, how much time did they take off the clock with that drive? 14 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and so they've laid out a little bit of a blueprint there, and I would not be surprised to see other people try and duplicate something like that.
All right, Matt. Over under for Taysom yards passing. I'm going to set the over under at 205.
I'm taking the over.
I will take the over. Rushing 60 yards. Over under.
I'm taking the under.
I'm going to take the over. Rosen passing yards, 345.
Ooh. Under.
I'm going to take the over. Total offensive yards for BYU, I'm going to set it at 399.
Under.
I'm going to say over. I'm going to say over. We'll get to our final predictions here in a minute. UCLA offensive yards over under 460.
Man, you are getting good at this.
I am a professional.
We do not talk about this beforehand.
We do not. We do not. I think about it beforehand, but we don't talk about it.
I'm going to take the under, but that one's going to be that's extremely close.
I'm going to take the under, but just under. Matt, prediction. Right now we've got Vegas is at 3. Favoring UCLA, which basically means Vegas thinks we're the same, right? I mean, that we're a 6-point difference, right? Then you get 3 for the home. So they think we're pretty close. Are you taking UCLA at 3?
Yeah, I'm taking UCLA at 3.
As am I, unfortunately. I've been really trying to talk myself into us beating UCLA, Matt, but I can't do it. My prediction on Saturday is UCLA 30. BYU 18.
I've got a very similar prediction. I've got UCLA 31, BYU 24.
We both predicted at the beginning of the year that this was a loss. So neither of us are changing our opinion, Matt. So instead of sticking on that thing depressing, let's go and predict the rest of the season.
Yay! Let's do it.
Are you ready? Virginia, win or a loss?
Win.
I am going with a win because we're going to be there and we're going to bring them some luck. Toledo.
Win.
Toledo looks all right, Matt.
They look only Toledo.
But I still am going to predict a win.
Yeah, in Provo, I like the Cougars.
Michigan State in East Lansing.
That's a loss.
That's a loss, man. Mississippi State in Provo.
It's a win.
I am also changing to a win. I don't think Mississippi State's nearly as good as we thought they were going to be, though we'll have lots of data between there.
Yeah, they are not as good as I thought they were.
Boise on the Smurf turf.
I'm going with the Cougs.
Really? Wow. I am going with the Broncos in that one. Cincinnati in Cincinnati.
I like BYU here.
I like BYU as well. SUU, we're both doing that. UMass, we're both doing that. Utah State and Provo, I think we're both there. Matt, you're predicting 9-3.
Yeah, I think I was 8-4 before this.
You were 8-4, but you have switched your tune.
Yeah, I think I'm swapping out the Mississippi State game.
Yeah, you're swapping out the Mississippi State game and Boise. You had Boise in preseason as a loss, too.
Yep. I don't know that Boise's as good as I thought they were.
Boise's probably about the same as I thought they were. I think that's a game that we win in Provo and we lose on the road. I think we're pretty comparable there. I think Mississippi State clearly is not as good as maybe preseason had them. Toledo might be better. That one makes me more nervous, but I'm still, like you said, I'll take the Cougs and Provo in that particular one. So Matt, they're kind of,
I don't know if it's just the way I feel about who Boise State has played or what, but maybe I'll change my mind after we see them against, I think they got Oregon State this week.
Yep. So Matt, give me one college football team that you, were impressed with this weekend that you think, I mean, there weren't a lot of marquee matchups. So, this weekend, but who do you got as like your one up? This is somebody that impressed you this weekend.
I really don't, to be honest with you. Like there wasn't really much to be impressed about this last weekend.
It was really a sorry week. Yeah, it was kind of terrible. Like after having that first week, which is usually the terrible week, it's like they just swapped the terrible weeks. I'm gonna say Louisville. Louisville was the one that I know Syracuse probably isn't good. But they did exactly what they were supposed to do against, at least they were playing a team that was in the FBS, right? And Michigan pounding UCF, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I guess, right?
But Georgia, how about Georgia almost losing to Nichols?
See, that's the kind of thing. So that's, if you want to talk about, if we're doing one up, one down, there's your down.
There's your down, right? Like,
you know, I mean, come on.
Like, why are they still ranked at all? Like, I'm not joking. Like, they shouldn't be ranked. They fell, but I don't, it's the same with Tennessee. You have a loss or a close win like that, you just drop them when it's 2 weeks into the season. They got to earn their way back into the polls. You don't give it to them because a couple of you guys thought they were good at the beginning of the year. Who cares?
Yeah, because you were wrong.
And TCU obviously but at least they didn't lose to a or almost lose to a FCS team, right? Arkansas might be good, so that'll be unfortunate for TCU. Well, Matt, anything else you'd like to talk about?
I think we've pretty much run the gamut here.
Yes, we have. Matt, of course, I'll remind everybody to check out our halftime show. That's on Facebook Live at facebook.com/riseandshout. We'll be starting there. It's my turn, so I'll be doing the UCLA halftime program. If you missed Matt's awesome analysis at halftime of Utah, you can still find it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/riseandshout. A little dated, I guess. We may start doing post-game show, but with these late games, we are not going to do a post-game show.
And I was far too emotional to do a post-game
show
after the Utah game.
After the Utah game.
It would not have been fun.
So, and Matt, I'm planning, we're going to do some, if we can pull it off, I'd love to do a Facebook Live, like a pre-game Facebook Live from West Virginia, because we'll be there!
Yes, that will be cool. So, yes, we need to figure that out.
We'll figure that out. I don't know at halftime if we'll be able to pull anything off, but pre-game maybe from the tailgate or some such. Well, thank you guys for downloading and listening. Thanks for all that participated in our survey, which is now closed. But thank you for those that participated. We had nearly 80 responses and some great feedback, and we appreciate that. Again, if you want to talk to us about the podcast in any way, Twitter, Facebook, and email are available. That's riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.